And his ability to use violence really put aside the second generation of the important sound systems and began to dominate the scenes. It's also a time where not only has the West Indian sounds, Jamaican sounds from buru music and mento begun to influence the production and sounds and in the way the Jamaicans were making popular music and evolving their sounds leading into ska in the early 60s. But it was really a time where they began to put out their own records, influenced by the success of recordings made of, for example, mento music, its release on Smithsonian Records. The sound systems would begin to record their own sounds with local singers. Moving away just from simple R&B, soul jazz records type of recordings that had already begun to be influenced and integrate the vibes and influences locally, and but also, sounds from the Dominican Republic, the calypso sounds. And as this sound begins to evolve, the ska element is becoming evident in the early 1960s. And this is a time at which Lee Scratch Perry begins to integrate the sounds. He moves to Kingston, Jamaica, and like many Clarendonians with no money, basically floor surfs, spending time on the floors of a tailor shop, and attracts the attention of Duke Reed. And not an errand boy, but he would go and sell records, live records. He would spy on sounds to see what the latest sounds, records were, what was a hit with the crowds. And that would became an evident skill that he had, was to hear the hits or to be able to spot singers before they were well known and understand what would please a crowd. He would evolve then into beginning to songwrite because he wanted to sing. And there was very much resistance to his voice and his skills. And it would take a bit of time before he could start recording records in 1962, 63, 64, 65. And then began to arrange music, working among others with Jackie Mitu on arrangements. He would learn how to play the drums, recording on percussion sessions. And then eventually in around 1966, begin producing with Cox and Dodd and the early days of Studio One. So he moves from Duke Reed at a period where he is not being able to record. But the kind of cataclysmic event between him and Duke Reed is Lee Perry's reproach that one of his songs, Rough and Tough, will be given without his permission to Stranger Cole and has a bit of success. From the conflict and actual physical fight or beatdown he receives from Duke Reed, he moves over and is taken under the wing of Cox and Dodd, who is an important player and where his role really begins to evolve in these ways that I've just described. He'll have a breakup around 1966 with Cox and Dodd as he's beginning to produce and move over to the Joe Gibbs and Prince Buster camps before about 1968, doing independent work and then collaborating with WIRL producers, creating the Upset label, and then moving on in around 69 to create the Upsetter label. That was so fundamental to the development of reggae music, and contributing to its evolution. We're going to try and look around that period that leads up to his own production work, his signature sounds, and that evolution into reggae music. We begin first, though, with that song that created the riff between him and Duke Reed and moves him into the Cox and Dodd camp. This is Stranger Cole with Lee Perry's Rough and Tough.
Who are you that I should be mindful of? You run for refuge and were rescued. That's a fact. Then why lie and try
You're listening to Funky Revolutions with myself, Khalid, on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Part two of our tribute to Lee Scratch Perry. The early years. His first released recording was in 1963 with Cox and Dodd. And it's there that with this track, first as an acetate played only at the dances, and then a very, very popular released in a limited series and ways, that he would get the scratch part of his name. It was a dance, and he was such a great dancer, he eulogized it in this song, Chicken Scratch. He was called Little Lee, and then Chicken Scratch. It was the scratch part that would stick, and to the man that we know now as Lee Scratch Perry, from 1963, his first release and success.
Jump around like you're mine.
Taku, produced by Clement Dodd and or Coxon and Rainford Perry, otherwise known as Lee Scratch Perry. Taku. A couple of more from 1965, a couple of more songs from this period that really shows the evolution and heart of music. And if you go back and read, for example, Pretty Funny Boy and other histories of Jamaican music in this period in the 1960s that is so fruitful and leads us into reggae music, the ska, the rock steady, so many of these initial musicians were, there was this core of musicians. There was a few recording studios, Federal, WIRL, a couple of others that emerged, that the different competing sound systems and labels that under these sound systems were often in the same studios at different, crossing over each other. And many of these musicians were fundamental to the recordings themselves, not the entire scene, but, you know, 30 or 4 musicians' names come up, like Tommy McCook or Jackie Mito, among others. And it's fascinating, the collaborations and the continuity over 20, 30 years, how these musicians, for example, the guitarist Ernest Ranglin, coming from rhythm and blues and jazz in the 50s right through until classic reggae periods and being part of the Upsetters. But they played with various, various collaborators and various permutations. From Taku, we stick to 1965, and we're going to hear, among others, we're going to hear, well, first, a track that he performed with the Soulettes, which was actually featured, among others, Rita Marley, a trio that backed him up on By St. Peter. And then we get to see some music also from the same period. And in this time period, I mean, he's working basically with what will become the Scatolites, musicians like Jackie Mito and others like that. From there, we go to Roast Duck, featuring the Dynamites, again a pivotal group and whose members would be essential to the various sounds and permutations of reggae music early, later on. And then we also get to hear, we'll get back to that, a song with the Wailers and Hand to Hand. On CKUT 90.3 FM, our tribute to the early years of Lee Scratch Perry.
Bye. hungry now. spice or bread, you can trim them down to size.
We shall be them one by one,
hand to hand, man to man.
We shall be them one by one,
hand to hand, man to man.
We shall be them one by one.
Hand to hand from the Scratch Perry, backed by the Wailers. This period of 1965 is really ska's evolution into rock steady. I thought we'd play a couple of more tracks, respectively recorded, all produced by Cox and Dodd. This period where he's going to become a producer, Lee Scratch Perry, that is, and as he begins to move away from Cox and Dodd. But we'll start with 64, Solid as a Rock, and then a track featuring the Gay Lads, Run Rudy Run. Before we begin talking with Moss Man about how this period fits into the evolution of Lee Scratch Perry's career. On CKUT 90.3 FM, this is Funky Revolutions.
Got to go.
Run, run, run.
Was the beginning of the career of learning the ropes of the industry, of singing, songwriting, arranging, beginning him to learn percussion, found sounds, beginning of mixing. It's all the beginning elements, you know. It's proto dub. There's dubs being half mixed and stuff, but they didn't have echo and reverb. They were maybe only the mixing board itself being really utilized as the actual, as one of the tools or the ZFX, you know. So it's the beginning part of that. And he had a really strong hand. A lot of people give credit to his people. Funny Boys went into being one of those first reggae songs. And so from the very beginning, when he started producing stuff on his own label, experimental, found sounds, crashing noises, babies crying, you know, the new type of rhythm, this whole kind of interjection, singing, toasting, all these things all merged together and all layered. The arrangement of like four or five guitars, you know, of all this layering of music and getting the musicians to play the best and most soulful and groovy they possibly could on the tracks. And that kind of Wallace soundy kind of thing was very much there. And then just transition into more minimalist, and then back into this whole other new type of kind of wall of sound production, which is much more experimental, you know, using weird phasers and this and that. So he just loved the process, and he loved to try and make things as better as they could, and was able to coax that out of a lot of the musicians. He wasn't able to specifically say these things. He didn't know, have any knowledge. Okay, go to go into a dissident, you know, go into I want you to know to go like you know, he couldn't explain arranging to songs. He could sing it, but he couldn't explain it in terminology like, okay, F minor bridge to C minor, then I want a descending, you know, like a horn line with the crescendo. He couldn't do that. He didn't have that knowledge to be able to communicate in that respect. But in the way that he did know, he did. In the way, you know, he would sing it, or he would, you know, communicate in whatever different ways. And sometimes it was just him vibing out. You know, I've spoken to him. And sometimes it's just him in the studio having fun, dancing around, coming up, just bouncing off ideas. And sometimes that's all it needs, you know. Within the process of a studio recording session, you need, it needs to be fun. It needs to be adventure. It needs to be this whole, this energy has to be in this room. And Scratch brought that energy for sure. He was that kind of guy. Because when you're with someone that loves the creative process and loves trying different things, obviously it's gonna affect the other people in the room, be it singers or musicians and that kind of stuff. And Perry, if there was anything that Perry, I don't think if there was anything more than maybe, I don't know, but one of probably the most thing he loved the most was the creative process and living in it, being it, you know. The living art.
What was talk a little bit about the upsetters, like as conductor, as producer, as
well. That would have started in around late 60s, so that some of these musicians already knew of him from the work he was doing with Joe Gibbs and Coxon and these other studios, kind of working, helping, writing, arranging different little things in there. And then from that point on, him starting his own label, it just grew, and all those original, all those musicians, they were always happy to come and work with him because they knew it was going to be something different. It's going to be fun. It's going to be different. And regardless of the money situation, I guess, they just were wanting to have fun and be part of that process because they knew if going with Scratch that it's an adventure. You don't know what's going to happen. You know what song's going to... And by 70, 71, by the early, he's already had a bunch of hit songs. They just knew that it was something different, very different compared to all the other studios in Jamaica.
And the Black Ark studio, that when did he burn that down the first time?
79.
Okay. So that golden period of the 70s, how did he evolve in that sound? Because you have all the classic records from Max Romeo and the Upsetters.
It's pretty minimalist in the beginning. So in the, you have to think about the 70 to 75 in Jamaica, the sound was roots reggae and lovers rock and very much rootsy though kind of stuff, and quite minimal. You know, the sound, the big influence of that time most was like someone like King Tubby started mixing the vocals of singers and making them a little more minimal and really accentuating the drum and bass. And, you know, catering to how the sound is going to be in a sound system. So how people are going to listen to this on those big speaker boxes and this and that. And by 75, 76, Scratch had a whole bunch of other hits, you know, new hits, Curly Locks and a few others coming out of the studio. And it was already a buzz, already kind of a mystical kind of thing going on, like interesting stuff happening. And then it just kind of escalated from there. Now, did Jamaicans think it was crazy? Yes. So from that phase-shifted experimental point, that stuff wasn't huge in Jamaica. Jamaicans, there was a few songs that kind of became hits for sure, Police and Thieves and War in the Babylon. You know, there's a handful of songs. But for most Jamaicans, they were just like, what is this weird stuff going on here? What is this fluorescent green milk you want me to drink?
Was that partly the sound or partly the myth of the man who would walk?
It was the sound itself. Yeah. It was unorthodox, experimental. It was hard for people to grasp, even in the rest of the world. For people that were musicians and engineers, they loved it. For people that have a deep understanding of engineering and mixing and found sounds and all these things, yes, you know, for me, very educational. The people of the two or three engineers that taught me the most without ever actually working with them, but just paying attention and listening to them, Scientist, Scratch, and Tubby for sure. But that's on the terms of, that's coming from somebody that was wanting to and, you know, study it and learn the learn about it and understand what was going on and how to kind of continue on within that legacy. For other people, for everybody else, it's not so much, it wasn't really so much a thing. Later on it did. Obviously it did once the 90s came around and jungle and trip-hop and all these other kinds of forms of much more experimental beat-orientated music. Up until now, you know, now it's a different scenario. Now people like, yes, now, you know, now there's like, yes, he's seen as like very, very important, very influential. So it's just unfortunate that it took so long because it did contribute to him having a whole mental breakdown and, you know, just turning into a wreck because it was just, he didn't get it. People outside of Jamaica, not that many really knew, kind of did, but it was like people in the world of like, heavy metal and rock and like it was just like something very much removed of what he would have liked. He would have loved to have like, you know, continued on in Jamaica, I'm sure, done doing that thing, but people just there were just like, nah. And then as it got weirder, more experimental, he was getting more underground and more eccentric, and people just were like, okay, this is
eccentric's a good word.
Quite eccentric.
Like that whole Super Ape period.
Yes. Well, the Super Ape, that was the element of those Island Records, the major label release. And then that's what brought, as it got more experimental and stuff, it became not commercially viable. And that's where the major, Chris Blackwell, started refusing that stuff. And you know what? If you listen to that stuff now, you understand why Blackwell refused that, because it wasn't going to sell like hundreds of thousands of units like the other albums did, like Police and Thieves and Warren About. It wasn't going, it, you know, it was just out there, super out there. And it wasn't just that. There's another element of that, too. There was his wife left, leaving him. There was, like, these kind of gangster scammers coming around for protection money. And then there was the ultimate breakdown, you know, it's quite sad, is the Congos, Heart of the Congos album, in which Chris Blackwell, in order to protect Bob Marley, took it, was coaching Perry the whole time, listening to the album, got him to remix it a second time, record, you know, trying to get the best thing, you know, going and giving the money. I don't know how much he gave him, 40, 50 grand, bought the thing, and then put it on a shelf to not mess with Bob. He didn't want it to compete with Bob Marley. So here is his whole, the magnum opus, this whole thing that led up to his career, his pinnacle album. And the one guy that could bust it big and bring it, took it, paid whatever X amount of dollars, put it on the shelf.
When did it actually finally get out?
It came out a year later, so on a GoFeed or whatever, the Specials label, you know, those guys, the ska, but UK ska, two-tone guys help. But, you know, the ska, the Specials little GoFeed little independent label out of England, that ain't Island Records. That's not Island Records major label release.
And you say that that was to protect the popularity and market share of Bob Marley.
Yes.
He had worked with the Wailers early on, no?
Yes, he had. He'd helped transition them, actually, vocally in their sound. He got Peter and Bunny to kind of, like, do three-part harmonies. Got Peter to start doing more baritone, you know, make it beautiful, beautiful stuff. So he'd had a history with them and recorded about 20 songs in the early 70s, and that helped to get the Wailers actually signed. When Chris Blackwell heard those Lee Perry, Bob Marley productions, it convinced Bob, yes, okay, these guys are amazing, we need to sign it, and that's what happened. Now, that was that, you know, that was in the early 70s, and they transitioned into that and became megastars. That did not affect, you know, Perry wasn't a touring vocalist or anything at that point. I don't think he did. He may have not have done a single show, as far as I know, during the 70s, the entire time. I don't think he did one live performance. So, to, you know, for who he was and the type of artist he was and the way he operated, it was just, it wasn't meant to be. And unfortunately, it led to his kind of mental breakdown. Yeah.
Of Congo Man. That album, whose shelving, part of the Congos, is so destructive to the mind state of Lee Scratch Perry. Our part two today, our tribute to him, the early recordings of Lee Scratch Perry as a singer. Join us next week as we look at the early days of his production from about 1966 to the early 1970s and the establishment of reggae music in Jamaica, his influence and contribution to that evolution from rocksteady on. I was Khalid on Funky Revolutions, reminding you as usual, free your mind, our collective ass will follow.
You need a fight, you better get uptight, and don't be a square, 'cause it's warfare.
Listen to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and then you wouldn't miss me so much. Should I do another one?
No.
No? Okay.
Peace, what's the deal, man? DJ Lord Jazz, straight from the Lords of the Underground. And right now, you checking out my peoples, DJ Static.
Stubba deep stubba.
Come on, man.
You understand what I say?
Hold up, let me do a drop for them real quick for their radio. Yes, it is serious. Give me a minute.
I'm waiting.
DJ Static, Professor Groove.
Yeah.
All right. What up, DJ Lord Jazz, straight from the Lords of the Underground, always hitting you one time, and right now, you're checking out We Funk Radio, baby. That's how it goes down. DJ Static, Professor Groove, We Funk Radio, hit me one time, make it funky.
Thanks, man.
Everyone knows. One good thing about music, when it hits, you feel no pain. Hey.
difference. Turn it up.
I level up dirty, the first thing to know. She see me work on my vertical growth. She see my journey and her infidel. She looked me up, said she heard of me before. She found a vibe that she listened to. Make a dance with no top in the living room. She a fan and she watch all my interviews. Now she hang by the ball when I'm in the room. Man, I make myself way too accessible. I'm just hugging the fan, won't let go on my hand. And she say that I'm way too incredible. I can see that she making it sexual. Initially, I'm going for it. She fired a combo flow, and then I know she admired me. Little did I know that shorty was trying me. Asked if I'm open to privacy. She got a secret in her eyes like the sun, and she concealing, no, she hiding. But we ain't equal in her mind. I don't even see the demon that's inside her. She full of deceit. Her man in the crowd while I got her backstage, and she all in my ear saying, pull up on me. I'm peeping the play. He looking for her while she looking for me. Look, I only shoulda, coulda, woulda, bitches. Imagine she could be fucking with my riches. You bound to be stood up, can't fuck up my business. I want you tonight, but I don't want the digits. I know you look fly, and I was kinda smitten, but moving twice shy, cause I was already bitten. Look at you burning all these fucking bridges. I see you hurting, I ain't even with it. Coulda been you. Said it coulda been you. It coulda been you. Ooh, ooh. Could have been you, ooh, 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 ooh. It could have been you, you, and I can see what's on your mind, fine, what you gon' suggest. Wanna ride or a little time or a little sex? You a lie, you a little fly, sitting on the desk. You a crime, you on demon time, I'ma never text. You, you.
It could've been you, it could've been me. I done got off my ass, I ain't going for weeks. When I jumped out the porch, I ain't going for weeks. Had to run me a bag, I want Patek Philippe's. I want a Rollie and brand new AP. And I dropped out of school cause it wasn't for me. I was getting them racks, I was flipping them peas. Bitch, I feel like Tony, I ain't only trust me. I don't part with them niggas, I'm just running the figures. Yeah, I ball like the Knicks. I go out in the ass for a flick. I feel like I made it, I ain't even rich. When you go up and make it, they say you switch. All them bridges I burn them, I don't give a shit. It was me and my dog, 100 racks, so we split. It was me and Javier, 100 racks in the VIP. I show the kids, so I pull up in spaceship. Gucci, Prada, I'm in the latest. My shit like lava, your shit outdated. I feel like the GOAT, I feel like the greatest. I shot at a Henny, now I'm feeling faded. No negative energy in my oasis. I show Javier, we ain't gonna play this. I go purchase black diamonds, but I'm not a racist. You didn't believe in me, but I forgive you, your family. If I eat you, gon' eat you, my family. It could've been me, but I chose us. McLaren, the coupe with the doors off. I go through pain, I just pull up. Yeah, this life give me cold heart.
Could've been you. Said it could've been you. It could've been you. It could've been you. Ooh, 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 ooh. Suggest. Wanna ride or a little time or a little sex? You a lie, you a little fly, sitting on the desk. You a crime, you on demon time, I'ma never text. You, you, you.
Bidding a good morning to you all, I'm Jerry Goodfriend, welcoming you to Folk Directions, a program of music based in and influenced by tradition, here on CKUT Radio, 90.3 FM in Montreal, streamed and archived on the World Wide Web at ckutfolk.com.